Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Fine. I mean, okay, I've got to get my phone back. Well, I'm just not ready now.
No, this is my revenge for you saying I was your engineer, you see. So I've just, she said, I'm the talent and you're the engineer, she said just now. Just making it clear.
I said.
The talent is ready.
I said you set the levels, which you could take to mean you set the standard, i.e.
we all know.
I follow
your lead.
We all
know what it meant. We all know.
I just meant you do the dirty work.
Yes.
And I take all
while
the praise.
You rock up.
How's this? How is it?
It's lovely.
Genuinely. Yes, no, anyway, I had to put my phone away, didn't I? Because it was because of the interference. Yes. Now I've had to bring it back.
Yes.
Anyway, if you hear me,
it's all such a struggle.
If you hear me interfering,
yeah,
you must say.
Okay, I will.
And then I'll
say, stop interfering, Harriet. Won't be the first time someone said that to you, I doubt.
Most certainly not. Shall I start it off?
Oh, why not?
Welcome to Ambridge on the Couch. And I feel really insecure about my Wi-Fi and my levels now.
Your levels are fine. I can't speak about your Wi-Fi, but...
But you can if it goes funny.
I will say
something.
Well,
I'm worried.
If it goes
do
funny.
I need to open the door, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, starting again. Mm-hmm. Take two. Welcome to Umbridge on the Couch, an in-depth look at the Archers with me, Harriet Carmichael, Jeff Thomas, Lucy V. Freeman and Matt Rodriguez Payne. Now, before we make a start on your emails, let's have a recap on what happened this week in Umbridge.
This week in Ambridge was sponsored by the word amazing. Ian's cooking was amazing. The sausages were amazing. The music was amazing. And Rob dying was amazing, probably. We also discovered the shocking fact that Stella is tone deaf, which came as a surprise somehow. In other startling news...
What, her singing?
Yes.
Yeah, stop you there.
When she
I
sang...
she was great.
When,
happy
no, when
birthday.
She sang happy birthday, she was she was off.
No, she wasn't. Lucy, I actually thought the opposite. I thought, oh, there they go again, a bunch of actors pretending to
pretending
sound normal.
Okay, well, in that case, let's discover the shocking fact that I am tone deaf.
No, I am clearly tone deaf because I thought it was great. sorry for interfering. Carry on.
In other somewhat startling news, Ed's been to paradise, Paul's going out with a second-hand car, and Jimus has now got so bored working in the shop that he started holding customers hostage in the hope that other people will come looking for them and he can eat more biscuits. We began the week with Ardil at his allotment. I don't know really what he and Azra were doing at this time of year, as everything's just turned into khaki mush or dried stick, but they sounded very busy indeed. She is naturally staying at the surgery and looking for a house in the village, so stand by for the next game of musical chairs where everyone otches over one so that a house can miraculously become available. Yeah. Ardil said he felt as if he was getting somewhere with Gay Grables. Where would that be, exactly? In other news, Rob died while Helen was loading the dishwasher. Even Tom seemed aware of the gravity of the situation, and their dialogue as siblings seemed really believable for once, largely because the scriptwriters nobly resisted making him call her Sis, just to make sure we'd remembered how they were related. Sometimes they think we're all in a dementia ward and they're our carers. Brian's party went as well as an 80th birthday party for a recently bereaved gentleman farmer can go that is being DJ'd by an abattoir obsessive, attended by a lot of people in their early 20s who bought the birthday boy a penknife, a copy of the Beano and a pea shooter, and a moody woman whose ex-husband has just died. Everyone tiptoed round Helen, who got in a snit about it. But if they'd ignored the fact that Rob had just snuffed it, she'd have been in a snit about that too. She got even snittier when Miles turned up to see if she fancied a walk. Why would she, Miles? Would she not just say, no, thank you, and bang the door in his face. Shows how much I know, as it turned out she did. And off they went, bizarrely. Then she threw a wedding ring in a hedge and went home. Brian was in high spirits because Natalia, who everyone thought was Brian's secret girlfriend, is about to become Brian's not very secret girlfriend now he's found out she's a really good cook. Oliver sounded distinctly jealous as he's having to wade through giblet soup from They Turkeys every night. And he's not sure that Clary hasn't gobbed in it owing to uppityness about selling the land. Everyone's after that land. There's going to be a bidding war. I hope the gills buy it and we never hear about it ever again. Over at Gay Grables, despite them opening in a matter of hours, everyone still had time to counsel everyone else for ages, which was lovely, if a bit frustrating, if you were one of the guests standing at reception holding your wheelie case only to be told that you can't actually have a bedroom yet until they've sold a field. Ian manfully maintained his strop for ages. I'd have been bored and started talking to everyone long before now, but he was still marching around the hotel all po-faced and huffy, just itching for someone to ask how he was so he could tell them that everything's all awful. Ardil tried to cheer him up by telling him that he'd found a second-hand kitchen in the skip, but Ian wasn't going to be taken in by that until he realised that if he gave up his job, he'd have to spend time with Xander. So all of a sudden, la femme du monde's sloppy seconds didn't seem so bad. Ed got a bit tearful in the bull and tried to get Adamine and Stella to join him in a rousing chorus of "This land is our land," but as they're all doing very nicely out of their land, they were unwilling. So we zipped over to Helen and Henry having a heart-to-heart on the sofa instead. Henry announced that he'd overheard Helen talk to Tom. Does that house have paper walls or what? Or has Henry bugged it all and everyone's just pretending not to notice? He then announced that he was thinking about doing psychology at A-level. Talk about physician, heal thyself. But at last, we're going to have a therapist in the village. Well, in about a decade, admittedly, even though it's the poor little chap who needs it the most himself. Aww. The end.
Oh, Henry is just too good to be true.
He's lovely, isn't he?
Too adult to be normal.
Yes.
And yes. Too protective to be. What's the opposite? Well, he's so loving, isn't he? And so mature. He's learnt too much about emotions.
Hypervigilant.
Yes, exactly. Yes. It doesn't bode well.
No,
I kept thinking, well, I guess he's 11 or 12, 12, I think. But you're 12 is that age where you can still be a nice boy, I guess.
Yeah.
But surely their cracks are going to show. Because I can't believe that you could get through all of that. And then on top of everything, Lee leaving as well. You know, when Helen said, oh, do you miss Lee? And he sort of went, yeah, a bit. But I think probably he must miss. Lee's been with them for ages now. Or had been. Anyway, good old Henry. I mean, Helen's so lucky to have him.
Yeah.
And he didn't even get that annoyed when she nearly didn't let them have takeaway pizza, which I would suggest to Helen, she orders for them pretty much every night at the moment.
Yeah. And I think that Henry has turned out beautifully in spite of her, not because of her.
Yes.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
In spite
of
her best efforts to ruin him.
He's basically brought himself up, hasn't he?
Poor little sod.
Yeah. But then I thought also I reckon if it was me and I'd been going through, you know, Rob, Jack's dad, but he's not a good dad, and then Lee's left, but he's not really my dad, wouldn't you then start to go, who is my dad? Surely that's got to be the next chapter.
Well, yes, lots of people have suggested, they suggested that a few weeks ago, that there would be some kind of, the genetic tracing thing.
Yeah.
Is gonna, and then, you know, we'll suddenly have a new character.
And I think, of course, you could go through life and I know someone who's gone through life and never questioned who her biological parents are. But I think a lot of, I guess when you get into your teens as well, when you start to, you know, question who you are, then you must surely start to question where you come from.
Yeah.
And again, it's something I bet Helen hasn't really talked about with Henry.
No, she's probably given him some pat answer that she's I don't mean pat, I mean rehearsed answer that she's sort of decided is appropriate and then hasn't addressed it. It's like, right, tick, done that. Yes, next.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, I'm glad. I actually found it a very poignant week, and there were lots of... It was quite bittersweet, wasn't it, some of it?
I think the writing this week was absolutely top notch.
I am in agreement with you, Ms. Freeman.
It was marvellous. The party was slightly odd, but...
Monday night, they love a weeknight party, don't they?
So who goes out on a Monday?
I mean, I thought Rory's 21st on a Wednesday, but you're like, yeah. well, he's a student and it's fun. But a Monday night for an 80th? Come on. You're just all that. If you have an 80th on a Monday night, you're basically saying, we don't really want you to come.
Yeah.
But we have to invite you anyway.
Yeah.
It's really just family, but, you know. Yeah.
You'd have it on like a Sunday lunch thing or a Sunday afternoon drinks party or something like that.
Weird.
Yeah.
And then I was thinking maybe that's more normal. Is it more normal to do that in a village because you're not having to travel back very far?
Maybe.
Who knows?
I thought that I practically applauded after that lovely, lovely scene with Helen and Jim in the shop.
Yes, that was a genius storytelling.
Gorgeous. When he said, I think you're going to thrive.
Yeah, I know. It really was a little...
All right, I will have a biscuit, which was a bit odd, but you know.
No, but actually even her saying, I will have a biscuit, we all knew what it meant and it was really lovely.
Yeah.
And what it... I thought, God, this is what they're so good at, the script writers, is also pairing characters.
Yeah.
So that the conversation can become, you know, not sentimental or more natural or... They're very good at doing that, aren't they?
Yeah. I just thought it was fabulously written, not overdone. And also when Ardil suddenly said to Oliver, I'm just going to tell you all about it and I'm going to do it really, really quickly and I'm not going to stop. What did he say? It's like running along a wall and because if you look down, you're going to fall off. So I'm just going to say it. And I know it's ridiculous saying that she's not my wife, saying that she's my, you know, pretending that she's my wife. But, you know, and I thought that was lovely as well. Who wrote this week's? Do you know?
Because
let's have a look on the thing. Because I tried to do it and I couldn't work it out.
You always have to go to Friday night's episode. Oh, God, I always get... Do you know what's annoying? I'm sorry, Lucy. But when you go to the BBC Sounds website on a desktop, you have to look at the channels in order. And I just want Radio 4 to come first.
As is the correct order of things, Radio 4 comes
1
first.
R, yeah. 1 R, there's so many of them. Just put the arches first.
I don't want
first.
BBC Radio Norfolk Broads. I just want...
let's have a look-see. Hold that thought. Hold it more. Oh, God, it's not there. Sorry, you have to look on your phone. Sorry, carry on. Talk about something profound while I find it.
Did you see the photo that I sent of the baby?
Oh, Lucy, I completely forgot to say congratulations. We've had quite a lot of WhatsAppy chat this week, haven't we?
Yes.
But so I'm so sorry that I forgot to...
This is lovely Sarah Kellaway, who has had... We've got a new listener who... she tried to use Jill Archer's building blocks technique to come up with a name. And what it came up with was Cradgett 6. I'm not sure anyone remembers that, but I remembered it because she sounded like she was going to be one of the emperors off Blake 7 or something. So anyway, she felt that Cradgett 6 was not the kindest name to bless a child with. So she's called her Greta instead.
I love the name Greta.
And she
It was on my list.
Oh, really? And she's wasn't it? She's in the Sound of Music. She was a little cute one on the Sound
of
Music.
No, that was Gretel.
Oh. Yeah. And
I've just actually opened your attachment of the sweet baby, but it's obviously been sent as in real size.
Oh, it's
photo.
Huge.
So I've just got a very, very big close up of the top of baby's head, which is lovely, but it looks a bit like I'm not going to say a hairy anus, but it. But there she is. Oh, she's adorable.
Sarah,
perfect
Harriet
baby.
Did not
well
just call
done,
your
Sarah.
Baby a hairy anus. Can I just make that
no,
clear?
No, it's just the picture
know,
came up
wake.
Slightly wrong. sorry. It came out of a hairy anus, presumably. No, not an anus. No, of course it doesn't come out of an anus. God, I wasn't listening.
How much have you had to drink?
only two sips. I'm just nervous because I feel so bad about not being across this earlier.
So you decided to make it better by calling the child a hairy anus. Well done.
Yes. I didn't call the child, I just called the top of her head because it just the way it looked. It just looked, because it's lovely, because the top of a baby's head is so soft and lovely.
It is.
Isn't it?
It is.
Yes. The opposite of what I said it is.
Yes.
Oh, she's so lucky. Congratulations, Sarah. I actually tried to find Sarah on Instagram. I didn't know if she was on there. Because I was looking for a photo there. Not that I was stalking Sarah. I was
you
just
always
trying
stalk
to...
people with babies. You know you do.
I know, because I need to see, yes, see them. I feel embarrassed now.
So how did you feel when Rob actually died? Did you cheer?
Well, no, because I knew it was coming.
Yes.
When she said, oh, Miles is contacting me, I was like, yeah. Oh, yeah, of course.
Because in my mind, he died when Helen walked out, he died.
Exactly. He'd already died, as far as I was concerned.
Yeah. He's dead to me.
But it's that thing, isn't it? Because she clearly knew. It's that thing when people are calling you and you just can't, you know what it's about, and you just cannot face it in that moment. And you go, I'll do it later. I'll look at it later. I'll look at it later.
Why didn't he just text her?
I suppose it's quite hard to, but presumably he left a voice. No, he did. He left a voicemail, didn't he?
Yeah.
Or no, he did text her. That's what Tom read out, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, it's that thing where sometimes you open a text and you only see the first line.
Yeah.
So Miles might have written
Hi,
something like,
"Hope you're well."
Was
Rob,
just
not
about
so much.
It can all become confusing if you don't open it.
It's like when the elderly sometimes get confused between "lol" as in lots of love and laugh out loud, and go, "Your auntie's just died, lol," which is what my friend Phil's mother did. Anyway,
that really is a confusing text.
He thought, that's a bit. I mean, I know they weren't that close, but seems a bit crude.
Oh, that's a bit so tactless. Funny.
So Auntie Jean has messaged us about the end of Titchener.
Yeah.
And she says, "Hello, lovelies. I've seen quite a lot of our poor Rob, or I have some sympathy for Rob because of his father, on Twitter and other platforms. I find this astonishing, and I'll tell you why. My father was a wife beater and a drunk, but he didn't need a drink to hit my mother. He would do it anyway. At age 10, I found my mother sitting at the kitchen table with a bottle of wine and some pills. It was that bad. But here's the thing. My two brothers are kind, caring, hilarious, beautiful individuals with not an ounce of malice between them. They chose not to be their father, and so could Rob. He did not. That was his choice. No sympathy here. Good riddance. Onward and upward to the Village Christmas show. Hurrah!" she says.
Well, that's there was no I didn't feel any sympathy when Rob died. When it's just relief, I guess, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah. Vicky Horton Turner said, someone on the Facebook Archers page said maybe Rob will suffocate himself and Helen will be blamed as the last person to see him alive. The reply was, it's almost impossible to suffocate yourself. It's like hammering in the last nail when attempting self-crucifixion. It made me laugh, as did this week's show.
That's what I was worried about all last week.
That somehow she was going to get into trouble for it.
They couldn't have done that to us. Yes. They couldn't have done.
Mm. Laurie Jones has just messaged to say, I miss Matt Crawford. Okay.
I know what she means. In weeks like this, bit of levity from Matt.
And Shelley Eden said that, first of all, she wanted to caveat it with saying, it's not that I don't recognise that Rob is a terrible monster. She said, I do recognise that Rob is an awful, awful person. Helen has had a lot of unbelievable trauma. Yes, she 1000% needs therapy. And yes, that may explain a lot of her own dysfunctional and toxic behaviour. But she is nasty. The unforgivable part for me was when she said to Kirsty something like, well, you wouldn't know, you're not a mother. Similar things to Lee and to her apparent other best friend, Ian. Recently, I've been listening to Helen speak and I've heard Rob's voice. Which means, of course, that she's a well-written and well-acted complex character. But I don't agree that she's just being human. That level of nastiness is something else. While I'm at it, the Pip and Ruth Archer school of sulk and stop talking to anyone I have the mildest disagreements with totally grinds my gears. Anyway, love you both. Love the show. Keep up the good work. I keep trying to think of possible candidates for the affair, but I'm worried about accidentally choosing people who are related. Lily and Jacob, maybe?
Oh, Lily and Jacob. That's a good one.
That would work. She likes the older man as well.
I
think he's too tactless for her.
I do disagree. Can I? I just have to stick up for Helen again.
Yeah.
I disagree because I think quite often stress and tension can make little bits of poison seep out of your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of that really nasty stuff that she was saying, like, you know, or the, you know, the sort of unforgivable slip to Kirsty. I just think it is because she's been under so much pressure.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that is her normal day to day, Helen. I mean, I think she's super tactless and patronising and all of that, but I don't think she's toxic. I don't think Rob has rubbed off on her. Can I say that?
I'd rather you didn't, but you have, anyway.
Okay. I'll just say, actually, after what I said about poor Sarah's baby, I just think I shouldn't say anything ever again for the rest of this podcast, to be honest. Sorry. I feel awful.
I think... It's like, what do I think? I think.
This is going so well tonight.
I think.
I feel like I've fully got my faculties with me.
Now, I'm trying to think if it's a fair thing to say. I think sometimes... You can, if you've been heavily influenced by somebody, you can.
Yes, you can. You can catch
yourself and then think, shit.
No, and also you can.
I did that wrong. I didn't.
I think also you can definitely catch their characteristics.
Yeah.
You know, you can. You definitely end up speaking like people you live with all the time. Or
yeah, and also if you've learnt that if you've recognised, okay, this person gets their own way by doing this like this.
Yeah.
Then it becomes, in your own art, becomes part of your own armory of.
But wasn't of isn't Helen
something in your own
of...
toolbox? And I'm not sure Helen is reflective enough to realise that that's what she's doing.
She also does have a spiky thing going on, doesn't she? She's always had that spiky side.
Yeah.
Which and because she's one of those people as well that's not afraid of saying something a bit spiky.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't need everyone to love her, does she? She doesn't say things. She's not careful about what she says sometimes, I think.
No.
She's very confident in her.
Yes. But then I'm just thinking, because when she was so annoying with Emma and patronising Emma about child rearing and saying...
I don't really remember that.
And saying to her, oh no, what you need to do is distract them, and you blah, blah, blah. And Helen and Emma ended up going, yeah, I know, I've had a child before. Helen did then reflect on it and then come back and say, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that.
And also, doesn't this also prove that Helen is just a very, very well written character? Because everybody has a different interpretation of her. And
well, that's what she said, wasn't it? She said, I know that means that she's.
Yeah. So maybe if we all thought the same about a character, then it would mean it wasn't well-rounded enough or believable enough.
Yeah.
God, this is so deep tonight, Lucy. Oh, my gosh. I found out who you wrote this week. It's Katie Hymns.
Oh.
We like her writing, don't we?
Yes.
Well yes, done, Katie. But then the trouble is, I think there's just not enough... They need another episode or something, because the whole Ardell story, I totally agree. It was really well written, that, you know, blurb. He had to get it all out because otherwise he would never be able to say it. But his story has been shortchanged rather, I think, because if it was all about men's mental health and it is November, then it hasn't really gone so he, you know, we found out early on he was grieving that he'd lost a partner, and we knew that he was carrying some grief with him. And then when he legged it from Gables, we knew because he couldn't. It was because he couldn't cope. But then he came back after just a phone call with Linda or something. Yeah. Wasn't it? He wasn't having. I mean, you know what used to be called a breakdown, and then.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It was a bit half-assed.
Do you know what I mean? And then,
it was, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And even when he finally told Oliver, it felt like it wasn't a big sort of... And of course, it was a relief for him, but it wasn't sort of after... We didn't really see the struggle, did we?
No.
We didn't see it a lot.
Because so much is happening off mic at the moment. So much is that we're not listening to.
Yeah,
that we're
not hearing. And obviously, because of Azra, we get to hear...
Yeah.
You know, or you're sleeping and you're... Oh, I love Azra. She's great, isn't she?
I like the cut
Again,
of her jib.
She's a bit of a Stella character. She's really easy to listen to, really natural.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's
And she
great.
Talks like a normal person, like, not like one of the middle-class Ambridge.
She's good for Ardell, isn't she? Because I think she'll loosen him up a bit. And well, he is obviously looser when he's with her because...
It is funny though, when she interfered as the older sister and said to Ian... You mustn't be nasty to him, you know, because he's good for a lot. And I thought,
is exactly the sort of thing I would do. Yeah. And then Rufus or whoever would be so annoyed. It's like, did you know, like, he's actually been going through quite a difficult time? So come on, like, oh my gosh, he's actually such a nice person. But it's just awful, isn't it, for the person you're talking about that you've stepped over that professional line. Guys, I think we can all be friends here. Like, I know he's your boss, but come on, guys. Oh, we're all normal people. So icky.
Julie Bacon has thoughts on Brian's birthday party. She's headed it, Brian's birthday party by Harold Pinter. Did anyone else think that Monday's episode with Brian's birthday party sounded as if it was scripted by Harold Pinter or possibly Samuel Beckett? It was one of the most bizarre episodes in ages, and that's saying something. Weird references to King Lear, the mysterious Natalia, cozy sardines, Josh, Paul and a fancy initial penknife, Stella as everyone's confidant, Rory the silent, the meat evangelising DJ Freddy, Jacob, have you tried the salmon to a spaced out Helen, and otherwise effectively operating as Kate's sock puppet? Yes. It was deeply confusing, that. It didn't sound like a real party again.
We know why, because there just aren't enough cast in the building at the moment, unfortunately.
Well, Josie has suggestions for that.
Oh, yeah?
She said, after 8 characters shared one episode in a supposedly small cottage which had the acoustics of a village hall, the bean counters will surely demand more texts. She's saying, the refusal of Helen, because she's talking about the refusal of Helen to hear Miles' voice instead of reading his text was one way of reducing the number of actors per episode. Might this device be used more often? Text alert sound effects for the following characters, all unable to speak. Joy eventually gets to the dentist who overdoes the Novocaine. Chelsea persuades Natasha that she really is qualified in aesthetic beauty procedures but overdoes lip fillers. Tom bites the end off his tongue in effort not to get a fat lip himself. Eddie gets his tongue pecked. Alan gets laryngitis practicing his Christmas sermons. Adam strains muscles trying to smile. Ruth strains hers trying to speak. Linda, Lily and Kate all crack their jaws in a talking posh competition. So the whole show could just be a series of texts read out just by one character. Oh, that's me phone. Hang on a minute. Oh, look, it's...
I think we needn't worry because of the creepingness of AI.
Oh, God.
They'll just AI them, won't they, eventually? Anyone who's just not saying much, they'll just manipulate the voice to sound like it is Tom going, sausage.
Oh, this is
Joy going, hi. Look at Natalia dancing over there. Hello.
This is David in Wales, who says, Prynhawn da Lucia Harriet. Shall we have a whip round for the BBC? The reduction in cast members per episode has started great. Last week we had Rory's party, Sans Rory. This week it was Brian's 80th and we only had Adam as a stepchild. We are supposed to believe that Tom, Helen, Paul and Josh get airtime, but the rest of Brian's children don't at his 80th. Please pass the shoehorn. Why not just schedule his actual kids for the episode and not bother with anyone else? Why the hell was Josh giving Brian a present? And that's before we even get to Paul chipping in and even having the idea of the penknife. Paul wouldn't give an old tweedy fart like Brian a second thought, not to mention going to his sad beige buffet and getting a present personally engraved. The idea of Paul as all-round life and soul of any party is also starting to grate. No doubt he'll be doing a conga line at the Laurels next week. Come on, everyone, turn those pacemakers up. The low point was poor Stella having to entreat Brian to make a wish when blowing out the candles. Where were the kids? And even a few grandkids? I can only assume that Rob's home hospice nurse was unavailable to make up the numbers. And do not get me started on Helen. If she doesn't want all and sundry referencing the fact that Rob
don't go to the party.
Has popped it, don't go to the effing party and lie low for a few days. Or move to a city where nobody knows you and have a go at raising your own children for a while. Her huffy response to Jacob was awful. Let's yes. hope she does one for a bit and we can bring in some more of those characters we have missed, like the woman who works on slacks and separates at Underwoods and the bloke who just emptied Sabrina Thwaite's septic tank. Who, I hear you ask? No, I haven't heard of them either, but they will no doubt be centre stage next week, continuing to displace established characters who are much missed. Like the last smear of Borsetshire blue in the packet, our beloved Archers is spreading itself rather too thinly at the moment. I have had enough. It. The cracks are starting to show.
Well, I don't know. Like, so, well, there's so much to unpack there. But the penknife particularly. I just can't believe they didn't go. I can't believe that was so throwaway. Because we were all going, huh? Why did Paul and Josh get him an engraved, a personalised penknife? Why didn't they just bring a bottle of wine? Like, Paul, has Paul ever had a conversation with Brian in his whole life? So I thought that was... Yes. That needed a lot of explanation, I thought. And it was, and because it took up quite a lot of time in the episode to explain to Adam what they'd bought. And then Adam was
it's
like,
it's a nice
oh,
one. Oh, that's yes. smashing. Oh.
That was just weird. Anyway, why didn't they just turn up and go, hi? Guy bought a bottle.
Yeah, we bought anyway, a bottle. Exactly.
Look, although Tom was then really rude, wasn't he? Because he was like, where's the booze? Anyway. There was that. Then I kept worrying. I kept worrying the same, sort of like, where is everybody?
Yeah.
And then I thought, again, are we misremembering? Maybe every 70th and 25th and has only featured six characters. I can't remember now.
I don't, something's changed and it sounds funny. Sounds wrong.
I saw Ali Dowling this week, who plays Lizzie. She hasn't been in it for a while, but you know, she said she's so discreet. She would never have said anything, but it's when you are an actor on The Archers, obviously you're not on contract, are you? So it might be a really long time before you're in it again. You don't know.
Yeah.
And there must be something, I guess, were they only using... Were the people at Brian's party basically the only people who were also in it for the rest of the week? I think that's how it works, isn't it? Like, you couldn't have Kate there if she wasn't going to be featured in any of the other episodes during the week. I'm sort of guessing that's how it works.
That seems ridiculous, though.
I don't know. That is a guess. I don't know how it works. And it might well be that we're just all reading too much into it and things are just as busy as they always were. But I felt that this week there were loads more characters in it than last week. But we don't hear the regular cast as I don't think we hear them as frequently as we used to.
But then when you say regular cast, who do you mean?
I mean the old timers, like, you know, even
Peggy's
David and
left.
Ruth.
Jill's not very well.
No, but Lizzie.
Yeah.
Ruth, David, I guess we do. And I guess Brian was in it. I suppose you're right. Maybe they're just all... disappearing. Do you think Natalia is going to become a real character then?
Oh, God.
She sounded great.
She did.
That's Angela Rippon.
She did.
Yeah.
But then you can't really introduce another 80-year-old, can you?
But you can if it's someone fun called Natalia, who has a terribly good high kick. Oh, that's Kirsty. Oh, my God. It's Kirsty at 80.
Someone on Twitter said,
darling,
you can't foxtrot in a cottage. You need room.
I thought Brian sat. I was thinking actually because I was thinking, wow, he's 80. He sounds so good on it, doesn't he?
Does.
He sounds exactly
he does.
The same.
Didn't you?
And
think
when he was talking to Oliver, I thought he sounded 20 years younger than Oliver. Actually,
well, that's because he was trying to pull a fast one again. So he always perks up, doesn't he? When he's why can't you just give it to me? And let's just not tell anybody anything about it. And also his delight at realizing that this woman can cook. So he's already thinking, good, well, excellent. I mean, I can stop now then. That's great. I'll just get her to do everything.
And I'd be delighted if I was Brian's kids to have, you know, if Brian's got a girlfriend who can cook, who's really good fun, and who's going to keep him company, what is not to like?
What is not to like, indeed. Shell Harris noticed, that Adam greeted Tom with "Fwar, it's the Sausage King."
Yeah,
at the party, which was unusual.
You were delighted,
and I thought that was ours. But then I realised we used to say "Sausage Boy," didn't we?
Which yes, is that, we said "Sausage
suppose,
Boy."
If Adam had opened the door and said, "All right, Sausage Boy," that would have been quite offensive. But the fact that he called him the Sausage King, I suppose, was slightly more flattering.
Yes, you're right. Actually,
Richard Keeling said, please, 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 can we have a what the hell is happening here in a few years' time that's just Adam saying, ooh, the Sausage King. he said, I'm sure I won't be the only person to say this week, but Helen telling Miles to go to therapy? Yes, I know, a lot of people went, are you fucking joking? Anyway, he also said he's got a theory regarding Joy and Rochelle. It's a bit dark, so apologies in advance. I don't think Rochelle is alive. That's why she never comes to visit Joy, because if Joy was your mum, why wouldn't you visit her? I think Joy is having difficulty coming to terms with her death, which is why she keeps her alive in her conversations.
No, that makes me really sad. It's given me
chills. I did quite like the idea that Joy was an undercover police detective trying to bust Philip Moss, which is why she moved next to him in Kirsty. So I wouldn't say my theories are the best. They are the best, Richard. They're just not accurate.
That would have been. And also, there's still time for her to come out as an undercover agent.
Yes.
Maybe Rochelle is just a made up story.
My God, this is some deep cover that she's
got. Deep cover. But that's the reason we've never met Rochelle. She doesn't exist. Oh God, I really hope that's not true though, because that makes me feel a bit worried and sad. But anyway, I'm sure we'll find out in the coming months.
Did you know that you've been roped into sibling rivalry by Antonia Charlton?
Yes, Lucy. What? How could I not, having lovely Antonia featured us?
She said,
"One of my favourite podcasts."
I had to let you know that I had to let you know that I got Ambridge on the Couch a shout out on Jay Garvey and Fee Glover's off air podcast this Tuesday. Do you think someone will then email them and say, you were mentioned? No. It was a particular win, as Fee hates how Jane goes on about how she loves the Archers and tries to ban any talk of it. It was also an extra point scored with my sister, who is in competition with me for getting our names on our favourite podcasts. You made my day reading one from me the other week, wrongly predicting the Helen Archer plot line. I hope the listener figures spike this week. Thank you, Antonia. That's very
kind.
No, but
also, Antonia's got another win now, because she's just had another email.
Yes, she has. She's winning hands down.
No, because I heard, because I am such a genuine fan of Off Air, and I heard Sarah's email being read out the day before, and then Antonia's email came on Off Air the next day. It all was very exciting.
It was.
And then, obviously, when they said Ambridge on the Couch, I went, and I didn't hear Fee going, oh, the Archers. Or Jane. I can't ever remember which one doesn't like the Archers.
Jane does.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
He doesn't.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. Yeah.
Yes.
No, Antonia, thank you so much for
that. If you want to rope us into any more of your the competitions with your sister and just get us mentioned on every podcast.
Oh, many. Yeah. Yeah. You know, Shag Married Annoyed, Off Menu, any of the biggies.
Film one, the Mark Kermode one, any that we don't care, honestly. Just any of them.
Rory Stewart one. All of the big names. Yeah. Thank you so much. Yeah. No, I was delighted. I was very excited. Also, I feel like we can say that we are recommended by Times Radio, Lucy.
Yes, as featured on...
Via Antonia.
Yeah.
As featured on Times... As featured on Times Radio's recommended podcasts.
Ooh, that's pushing it a bit. That's like those theatre reviews.
When they just take a tiny bit out of context.
When they say,
"It'll just be ever so good," but they've cut off scenery,
and they've just put, "I couldn't wait to go."
You're very, very good.
Basil Clement says, although at the time of writing, I'm 3/4 of an hour away from hearing Friday's episode, I'm going to take a gamble and suggest that the best part of this week's Ambridgian, or is it Ambridgite, output was the couple of scenes involving Jim and Helen. They were beautifully written and beautifully acted. Jim's kindness was quite wonderful, and Helen, heaven be praised, actually heard, listened and attended. She even ate and enjoyed a chocolate biscuit, the sensible wench. I, insensitive fellow that I am, was very nearly moved. Hurrah for the for the writer, hurrah for the actors, hurrah for the characters, and of course, hurrah for chocolate biscuits, wherever they may be dispersed over land or sea. Hear, hear, I agree.
Everything about it was perfectly pitched, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And when she was even, you know, she'd lost her, because we've all been there when you're having a bad day and or you're so distracted or stressed by something and so you can't find your card or... But it's just right in front of you the whole time and then knocking over the mayonnaise and it's awful...
Yeah.
And then somebody being kind to you is just the most generous gift, isn't it?
Yeah. 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 Absolutely.
And then when Jim, it was so moving, wasn't it? When Jim, she said, "Oh, what did the bad man do?" or something. And when Jim told her, she just went, "Oh," and she did it so, it was so realistic, wasn't it? It wasn't over the top.
Yes. Yeah.
It was so genuine.
Yeah.
That it made everything okay.
And then when she said, "So do you feel?" He said, "Well, I feel relieved. I feel relieved now." And there is a sense of relief and a sense of, you know, you've left that behind. And I thought it was lovely.
But also, I also thought everything was just very clever. The walk, I mean, Miles coming and need, because my heart went out to Miles because it's so... Oh, I can't think of words when it's Friday night. But he hasn't got anyone else to talk to about Rob. He's only got Helen to talk to, really, hasn't he? Because he can't talk to his father about Rob.
No.
And this, you know, the sadness of it is it's not Miles's fault. What Rob did isn't Miles's fault.
No.
Even though, Miles was led to
believe
that.
But even then, Miles said... Do you know what? I'm actually beginning to think that some of what you said was true in court.
But then, to be fair to Miles, he was coerced as well, wasn't he? Because otherwise he wouldn't have believed. So he's also been under...
Yeah.
And it's very complicated, obviously, because Rob did protect it. I mean, it's just a terrible... The whole thing is tragic.
Yeah.
But I did feel sorry for Miles because I thought he's gotten... he's got no one else to share this experience with.
Yeah.
What's that? Rufus has just bought wine.
Another wine.
Thank you. A whole bottle. I got a top up. Because my cheeks have already gone quite red. I feel a bit hot and emotional. It was an emotional week, wasn't it?
Was very.
But that's the thing. It was all very complicated. Yeah. And there's a lot. It's been a very emotional week. Mm. I also found tonight's episode. Oh, my God. There's so much this week. How did you feel about Ed in the pub?
Ugh. Well,
I actually found it really moving again, Lucy.
But it was...
It really did.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. It was frustrating because he hasn't tried properly.
No, but even if he hasn't tried properly, once you've had a drink or two, speaking from experience, when he was going, it's this, when he said, this is my story over and over again.
It's the same the whole world over.
I thought, yes, it is.
Yeah.
And it is for a lot of people like Ed, and it's awful, and things are never going to, I mean, you know, we're not going to go political, but things are not, things don't change, do they, for many people. And even if you try and try and try, it's a terrible, and especially in a village, it's, I think, because I grew up in a village and it's everybody gets along so well, don't they? But ultimately, there's landowners.
Yeah.
And there's
the divide.
People...
There's the haves and the have-nots. There absolutely is.
Exactly.
There's the people in the big houses and the people that work for the people in the big houses. And
And probably it's been like that for generations. Yeah. And probably it'll continue like that for generations.
But it's that something so enormous has to happen to lift somebody completely out of poverty, to lift them out of subsistence, basically, just, you know, just surviving. And Ed just can't see what that's going to be.
Is way too wide. Mm. He'll never be able to. He won't be able to buy land for himself in an affluent village.
But Emma will always try. And Ed will always moan. That's why they're a good couple.
But I think, in a way...
Whether or not she's right, she will always have that sort of self-blaming thing, as well as I'm just not trying hard enough sort of thing.
But I thought the awkwardness was really good as well. Because when he went to Adam, I know it's not your fault, but, you know, ultimately you will inherit that land.
And so will Ian, because you're married to him and...
You know, and it always goes back to Chris Carter, doesn't it? Because he married in, so he'll be all right as well.
Yeah, yep.
But I know it's sometimes really poignant. The same old for Ed. It's the same old story, same old story, same old story.
Yeah.
So
Joe always used to go on about, and Joe Grundy was incredibly dismissive of the ones that some of the others kowtowed to, like Peggy Woolley you know, even Phil Archer. He wasn't very keen on him. He was a true sort of egalitarian socialist, really, Joe was. And I think Ed can see the pattern. He doesn't just go along with it and go, well, that's just how it is. He does question it.
And quite right too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And in a way, maybe Adam should rethink, like, maybe Ed hasn't tried all avenues, but actually, if he really is struggling and it's got nowhere for those Texels.
Mm. Although, as Auntie Jean pointed out, he's got loads of room for the Texels.
And also, he has had quite a few handouts from Oliver, hasn't he, over the years? Or they all have, really, haven't they? And presumably, when Oliver carps it, then they're in line for a bit of inheritance, aren't they?
Yeah.
I mean, Oliver is going to own a bit of Grey Gables. And who else is Oliver going to leave his money to?
I wonder if that that chat with Stella will result in her changing her mind or trying to persuade Brian.
Yeah, I did think that there might be, I think probably it will.
Yeah.
But I thought...
But then she'll have a row with Pip, won't she? Because Pip will say, you can't keep your sheep on...
Bring it on, Lucy. Bring it on. Another row between the two of them. Another storming out.
A picnic.
Has Hannah moved in yet?
Picnic.
We don't know.
Row.
Do we?
No. Who has picnics in November, for crying out loud? Michael Gorman, the doorman, says Helen was Bilbo Baggins hurling the wedding ring of doom into the forest of forgetting. Am I the only person who's beginning to find Paul intensely irritating? Pointless cheeriness allied with being judgmental would bring out the red mist in me if he were someone I knew. I will be 83 on March the 6th next year. If another regular listener is older than me, I would be happy to hand over the engraved silver cup that is held by the oldest member. All the best to you both, Michael G. Golly, I didn't realise he was 83.
Yeah, because you kept saying you didn't think Michael was our oldest listener.
Yes, well, I still don't, but he says he is. And people don't often age themselves up, do they?
83, any other offers? 85,
going,
anybody?
Going. Yeah.
Oh, that's a bit insensitively.
I didn't mean that. I meant like an auction. Right, now, this was Steve Barry, who says, yep. If St. Stephen's wants a new stained glass window, then Jacob is much more deserving than Nova and Seren as a subject. You refer to man-children from time to time, but Kate is surely whatever the female term for this is. I can only assume that Jacob's assumed neurodiversity enables him to absorb or ignore the selfish, flaky, incompetent, brutally unaware of her effects on anyone else. If it's not that, then I can only presume that she's incredibly good in bed. As for the Alice storyline, I've never seen anything so obviously telegraphed in a storyline, and I've been listening to The Archer since well before Rory was born. Yes, it was rather painting my numbers, that. But nothing's happened, so presumably they haven't met up yet. And yes, poor Jacob, but I did like it when he...
Yeah, me too.
He tried to get it right, and he said, I am sorry to hear about him. And then she went, whoa, whoa, and he said, salmon!
Yeah, that's it. I thought Helen was so rude.
Yeah.
Or Tom's like, she doesn't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
It's like, Jacob was trying his best to say the right thing. And you, surely in that circumstance, you just go... Okay, yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
You don't have to be a moody.
Or you can say, yeah, thanks. It's really lovely to get away from it all and come to a nice party.
Exactly.
And how are you?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes, moving on. Yeah. But when it was like, summon. Oh, that was so funny.
Right, now.
Oui, ma femme du monde. Surely they've got something to do with Sirs Arrers.
They must have.
They must be the Sirs of...
Yes.
The Sirs Arrers. Or Lasseur.
This is... Do you remember last week we were trying to work out about church finances? And we said that Reverend Julie Bacon had to write it and tell us.
Yes.
Now, you... Because you said, how does it all work in terms of what is the money that... Peggy's pulled her money, so where's that money gone from? Julie says, I think the question was about what happens to what most people would call the collection, the money given on Sundays during the service. It's probably more accurate to talk about the church's regular giving. Most people who attend a church regularly will give something financially and often in a planned way, in like a standing order. I assume that when Peggy made such a song and dance about stopping her giving to the church, she meant that kind of regular weekly giving. Yes, I thought that too. So that's for the church to meet its bills, pay for upkeep and maintenance, and almost... certainly contributing towards a central diocesan pot, sometimes called the parish share or the common fund, which is then used to pay clergy stipends and the cost of centrally organised services. Bigger and more affluent churches are expected to give more than smaller ones, so that the ministry can be sustained.
Oh, I see. It all goes into a pot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She said church finances, even in a small rural parish, can easily assume Byzantine complexity. Sometimes people give money to churches for specific purposes, such as for the upkeep of the building or organ maintenance or looking after the graveyard.
Bell tower. Yep.
Such funds have to be identified and administered as separate from the general purpose fund. You can't raid the roof restoration pot and put it towards paying your parish share without getting into hot water. That's without mentioning fees for weddings and funerals, some of which goes to the individual church, some to the diocese, not some... to the organist or bell ringers. And of course, sometimes churches will raise funds for charities and missions close to their heart. So if a church is raising funds, it needs to be clear about the intended destination of those funds. I'm guessing that whatever these nebulous plans are that Alan, Usha and Jacob are working on, it's probably to raise funds for the church's general purposes, given that's what's taken the hit from Peggy. But who knows, she says.
Oh, sounds terribly complicated.
It does.
Do you know what it's like? It's like when it's... because this is what I'm doing at the moment, when you're raising money for your teacher at school, you know, but then there's another pot. You're raising the money for the two teachers, the Christmas present, But then there's another pot, and that has to go to support staff and specialist heat. Oh, it's just very complicated.
No wonder there are so many Agatha Christie plots in which the person that's not the vicar but the next one down, the curate.
Yeah.
The curate's off inching money or doing something funny with the finances.
I think it would be really easy to do.
Yeah, because it's so confusing.
Yeah, because you're like, oh, well, this bit is for the paving slab, this bit is for the pews, this bit. And you'd get so confused you'd lose track.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely.
Good luck, Julie.
That makes sense now, Julie. Thank you very much.
With all those pots. It's just too many. Too many.
Do you think Peggy's just got a pot called me?
Meow.
Me and my family. The bits, the ones I like at the moment.
Yes, exactly. And then she every time they do something, one of them does something, she takes out the coins from that one and puts them in one for Jakob, hopefully. Do you think Jakob wouldn't get paid for playing the organ, though, would he?
I think you do maybe if you're doing it for a wedding, but not
right.
If you're doing
fun.
It for shits and giggles, no. Right, shall we do?
What the hell is happening?
What the hell is happening here?
Right, this is last week's.
You reckon?
Aye, even in Ambridge, the agenda's moved on.
Oh, really?
Of course. There's a hot new couple to talk about.
Who have you pulled now?
Oh, me. The scandal's done at Woodbine.
Woodbine Cottage?
Aye. There's a note yesterday. Wants an extra pint. Well, I had to ring for the money anyhow. So Christine Barford comes to the door, oh, yeah, dither. Dressing gown buttoned up, rang.
Jazza.
Dressing gown. Rang.
Buttoned up, rang. Yeah, so who was Christine having it off with?
Well, turns out, well, so you haven't got a clue, have you?
Because
we couldn't work it out between us. Jackie Allingham said, I think Christine was having a very close friendship with Jim Lloyd at one time, but it seemed to fizzle out. I think they did crosswords together and talked about the opera, so maybe he stayed over.
Oh.
Jenny Harris said... Jim had moved in with Christine purely platonically following the flood. I'm guessing his house had been engulfed. I can't remember if they were being secretive about this in case anyone got ideas or if Jazza was just putting two and two together and making five. Anyway, that's what I think it was. Love from Jenny in North Devon.
Oh, okay. So looks like we're heading down the right path.
Yes. And the answer is from Jimmy Jams Everett, who says... Jim had moved in with Christine because Clive was back in the village visiting his mum Ivy, who was very ill. Christine was scared of what Clive might do, so to support her, Jim moved in. They said it was because Jim's heating was broken, but then rumours began that they were dating. But this wasn't true. They just became very good friends.
Oh, that's so sweet. So actually Jim moved in to protect Christine.
Yes.
Oh, that's really lovely. Mm. I'd completely forgotten that.
Yes. So, this is this week's one. You ready?
Yep.
Mike, where's this compost toilet I've been hearing about?
Eddie's your man for that. Hang on. Jim, what is Joe doing here?
Joe?
He's just pulled into the car park.
Good heavens.
I've no idea. He shouldn't be here. It isn't an open invitation.
Whatever's he done to Bartleby?
Looks like he's got him wearing some kind of red Indian headdress.
I'd better go and see.
Oh. Do you know?
I haven't got a clue.
That must have been a while ago. Well, it clearly was.
Clearly was
because
Mike
was
in it.
And they said red Indian. Don't know, Lucy.
What the hell?
What party would Mike be at that... Joe's not invited.
Well, it said a compost toilet. So that is that the was that
oh,
the
do
green,
you think it was the opening of
the green burial ground? Maybe.
Oh, I was thinking the opening of spiritual home.
Oh yeah.
No, but why wouldn't Joe be invited? Another one that probably we listened to, Lucy, but we just cannot remember. Like a memory that your friend. You know,
this is like
you and you have no idea what they're talking about.
I feel like when you see it on TV when people are in homes and they ask them who the Prime Minister is and they just go blank.
No, but that's the thing, isn't it? Your brain is completely blank.
Yeah.
But most probably we listened to that episode and had an opinion on it.
Yes. And probably quite a vehement opinion as well.
And wanted to do a podcast about yes. it, but they didn't exist at that
this
time.
This is all very Buddhist, you see. It's about letting things go because nothing is permanent because you just forget about it completely.
I do not know what that is, do you?
I also do not know what that is.
God, James is so good
he
at
is
digging
sneaky,
up these
gems. Sneaky.
Very sneaky. Because actually, also, it's great to hear Mike.
Yeah. And Jennifer again.
And Jenny, darling.
Now, we're going to whiz over now to, to Natasha at Bridge Farm, who is
excellent.
Now coming up with ideas for Bridge Farm as a location.
So
in her attempts to break into television or just somehow make some flipping money. We'll cross over to Natasha at Bridge Farm.
Hi, Mrs. Archer. I'm Scott from ITV.
Call me Natasha. Tash, actually, that's more telly, isn't it? Thanks so much for coming to Bridge Farm.
Yeah, no problem. Your email really intrigued us. We're always on the lookout for new locations for I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. The place in Wales was great, but everyone got trench foot, so we can't use that again. But we'd really like to stop going to Australia.
Flights too expensive?
No, nobody wanted to put up with Nigel Farage on a 16-hour flight. So tell me, what's in your head? What's the vision?
Well, we've got a variety of locations that will work really well. For camp, I thought the area behind the tea rooms. It's wild, overgrown and full of feral goats.
Feral?
Yeah, they've been living off butter wrappers and used tea bags for the last 2 years, so they're fat, over-caffeinated and really bitter. Now, I've got loads of ideas for the trials. Firstly, snorkelling across the reed bed sewage system. That'll sort the men from the boys. But you'll have to make sure they've had cholera jabs. Or they get dangled over the sheep dip and have to pick out bits of quiche with their teeth. There's also Danger Dairy, where they have to eat Clary's cheese.
And what?
No, that's it. Then there's a really scary one, the Perilous Pat. Contestants have to tell Pat she's wrong about something while they have their feet tied together and she takes pot shots at them from across a field.
Any photogenic locations?
Oh, tons. There's the edible garden, for starters. Hacking their way through 12-foot carrots, the turnip tunnel, the leek labyrinth and the mighty potato.
Wow. What's the mighty potato?
Just a really big potato. Really massive it is. It's got a look of Neil Carter, actually. Anyway, in terms of heights, you could use the treehouse that Lee built for the boys. He was a bit distracted when he put it together as he'd got his trainers on the wrong feet. So I wouldn't trust it. That's a bit of jeopardy.
Well, that certainly all sounds very interesting and something we'd definitely be keen on. Where can we start filming?
Ah, well, we've got a few domestic issues going on here. There's a dying psychopath in the next village who's the father of one of the children that lives here, and we keep expecting him to turn up and wave a gun about through the dairy window that we built for absolutely no reason whatsoever. His ex-wife is a bit highly strung, what with the stabbing, the custard and the prison stretch, so no one's sure what she's going to do. But to be honest, Rob sounds really ropey, and he could well be dead by the time this goes out, so it could be sooner rather than later.
Yeah, Tash. This sounds like more stress than we're after, really. It's a bit risky.
Stress? This is normal for Bridge Farm.
Yeah, okay, but I think it's a no from us. We need a pretty stable environment for filming. This is a lot of drama to deal with.
Drama? That's an idea.
Yep, well, I'll leave that with you. Thanks, Tash.
Any contacts on Broadchurch, Scott? How about Happy Valley?
Bye, Tash.
I could just see Sarah Lancashire as Helen. They just have to make her look less cheerful. It's a great story. Get your people to call my people Scott, yeah? Scott? Damn. There must be some way to make money out of this bloody family.
Thank you very much, Natasha.
Have you been watching Jungle?
No.
No?
No.
I watched episode one.
How was it?
It's got Farage in it, obviously. Yes. I couldn't. It's just on so late. I couldn't really. My eyes didn't stay open. Also, nothing remarkable has happened yet.
No.
There haven't been enough bust ups, I don't think.
Okay.
For it to get really good.
Okay.
And it's just, you know, Nigel Farage being slimy, basically.
Grace Dent is on it, isn't she?
Yeah, she's good. Yeah.
She loves the Archers.
What? Lucy, if we'd known, we could have got her to mention Ambridge on the Couch on the telly.
How would she have done that?
Because Antonia could have told her.
Oh, yes, of course.
Recommend us.
Yes.
But on the telly.
Yes.
She could have been talking about the Archers and, you know, does anyone listen? And, well, if you do listen, there's this podcast and it's called Ambridge on the Couch and there's a Twitter feed, et cetera, et cetera. Oh, damn it. We missed a trick there. How do you know she listens to the Archers?
Because she came to something and I met her.
Oh, Lucy. Mm. Come on.
Sorry.
You're in PR. How could you not get her to mention our podcast on primetime ITV?
While she's eating something's asshole.
While she's eating a dick of a kangaroo. Oh, by the way, guys, just wanted to mention this amazing podcast about the Archers. AOTC. Delicious. Yeah. It's a shame, Lucy. I'm going to start following her more and liking her more on all her posts.
Okay.
I put two reels up today, Lucy, to try and get us some... now that we've been mentioned on Times Radio.
Okay.
I was like, oh my God, quick. Do something on social media. Quick, quick. Come on. Ride the wave, ride the wave. Put two reels up. Because if you haven't got a reel, you're a nobody on Insta.
Right.
It's gone are the days of just putting a pretty picture up.
Oh.
No one's interested. You have to have moving pictures and words.
What did you put up?
Well, I put, you know, from the sketch, I just put a bit of the audio with a picture.
Oh.
You have to make it into a movie. Otherwise you don't get the, it doesn't come up on anyone's feed otherwise.
Oh.
So rude of Instagram. It's not, you're just not allowed to put a normal picture up anymore.
That's cheating.
I know, because for example, if I want to see Sarah Kellaway's baby, I have to, it's not going
to
come up on
my
feed.
You have to see a film of Sarah Kellaway's baby.
I have to see a film of it crying.
Yes. Yeah.
Otherwise, I'm just never going to see it.
With some jaunty music behind it.
Yes.
And ideally a golden retriever, which is what every time I go on Instagram, all I ever see is golden retrievers. I don't understand. And then it says, would you like to see more of this? And I think, no, why?
And the trouble is, this is how it works. You'll see that golden retriever, and because maybe or a doggy that looks like Cooper, and you'll hover on it to check it's not Cooper. And because you've hovered for more than you would hover normally on a post, it goes, Lucy loves golden retrievers, so it'll only give you golden retrievers in your feed.
Oh my God.
That's how it works, Lucy.
Well, all I get is golden retrievers. I'm not on it, but whenever I have been on it, if one of my children, you know, say, go and look at something. It's golden retrievers, or it is ladies of a certain age telling me that I can still eat carbs, which is very kind of them. Thank you.
Which ladies are telling you that?
Dieting ladies, I think, who are very, very keen to make sure that I can eat carbs. And all I have to do is, I have to do Pilates up against a wall.
Oh, God, poor you.
That's I don't do any of this. It just tells me I should. Pilates up against a wall, eat carbs, and pay a lot of money to a doctor who's a doctor of the internet. He bought his qualifications from the University of Hawaii.
And he's lured you in by telling you only have to eat carbs, or you can eat more carbs. Eat more carbs. And now pay me this much money and I'll tell you how many carbs you can eat.
Yeah.
I just get Patsy Palmer because...
Pasty Palmer? Why do you get Pasty Palmer?
Patsy Palmer. You know Bianca from EastEnders? Yeah. Because she has such incredible hair.
Oh.
She's over 50.
Yes, I know.
If you can believe that. Mm. Yeah, but you can't believe it. So I linger long on her photos to check.
Trying to work out if it's a wig.
Yes. Checking how this can be true. But because she looks probably exactly
the same. She probably has those things, doesn't she?
Yeah, but she doesn't look like she does. And she has such incredible glossy hair. So all I get is her feed, and she DJs a lot in LA.
So I get golden retrovers, and you get...
Well, we both get, you get golden manes or ginger manes. Yeah, basically. Oh, God, I should try and hover more on political posts and stuff.
Rather than trying to work out whether or not Pasty Palmer is wearing a wig.
She's so stunning. She's actually more stunning now than she was when she was in EastEnders.
Right.
If you can believe it.
Mm.
Anyway, I need to find Sarah Kellaway. Please tell me if you're on Instagram, because then I can look at your baby. In fact, anyone who's got a baby, can you just direct message me so I can linger long over babies, please? Or puppies, or dogs. Or if you've got really good hair, I'll look at that too. Because there's not enough on the Archers. The only Archers posts are basically us, Cider Shed, all about the Archers, and the Archers. But the Archers post least out of all of us. So there's not really enough Archers on Instagram, sadly.
Is that not because the Instagram is about pictures and the Archers is on the radio?
I know, that's why I'm making these reels would make sense is really hard. To me.
Yeah.
But now you see what we
I
should,
don't feel this is the medium for us, Sarit.
No, the medium has changed as well because all podcasts now are filmed. We are the only people doing a podcast that has no direct access.
Does that mean
to
I have to
face?
Put a bra on? I don't want to put a bra on.
You can just film yourself from the top half. A bit like Sarah's baby.
Yes,
just film
that requires me to put a bra on. They're not that low.
No, it's God. Never going to happen.
Good. Right. Do you remember the question last week of who would you like to murder?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Do you really?
Yes, no. I do. Yeah, okay. For the competition.
Yes. Because you told me off and said it was too...
It's too dark.
Too dark. But Rachel Kennedy is our winner, as she has made
great.
It not dark. She said... she's done it as an article in the Borchester Echo.
Oh, wow.
A shocking incident this week has rocked the quiet village of Ambridge. Joy Horville spoke of her alarm when she saw her partner Mick being throttled with his own Speedos as he attempted a spectacular dive into the hot tub. I don't know why he was wearing them round his neck, she exclaimed, but that's my Mick for you. It was believed that the gentleman had been encouraged to perform such a daring feat in his attempt to get some more talking scenes in the popular docudrama. Whilst Mr. Harrison Burns believed it to be a case of death by misadventure, there are some who believe foul play was involved in the hope that Joy could get some real joy in her life. So, you win
very good.
The tea, Rachel. Yay. And the runner-up, which was very bleak, was Daniel Millichip, who said...
What
was
did
it
he
gone?
Say?
I think we're going to have to boil Eddie in some turkey stock and chop him up into bits and put each body part in a different compartment of the ferret wheel.
Oh, my
displayed
gosh.
With an extra noisy Catherine wheel behind it. Daniel, that is horrible. You are a sick, sick man.
But it's what Clary fantasises about.
Yes, but it does make you
especially in turkey season.
Yes.
Wow. Daniel, stop watching horrible
you
things
need help.
On the telly.
But it doesn't matter. In about a decade, then Henry can come and minister to you and counsel you and psychotherapeutise you. Now, Matt Rodriguez Payne.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to let us know that he is writing an Indian piece for a fantastic theatre group called Raised Roof, based in Harlow, where he worked at the town college for 9 years. And the members are made up of adults with learning SEN and accompanying physical difficulties. And he said, can we give them a shout out? We would be delighted.
Yes, I'm looking them up immediately.
It's Raised Roof, R-A-Z-E-D.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, how exciting.
So he's writing an Indian music piece.
Wow.
He's so clever, Matt.
Oh, my God. He's well clever.
Well clever, innit? So how's it going, Matt? When is it on? And
oh, they've got a quote from a friend of mine at the top. Oh. Isn't that funny? Wow, how amazing. I'm going to start following them.
Okay.
Yeah.
He has, in the middle of all this, he managed to send us a piece as well to do. God. Because he's brilliant.
Matt, I feel just, sometimes I just worry, Lucy, that poor Matt, like it's such a busy time of year and he's clearly got so much on his plate. And then he's like, oh my God, I just haven't done. Matt, you know you can have a week off whenever you need to. This is, Lucy is not, you haven't made Matt sign anything, have you?
Maybe.
I just feel so bad for his poor wife. Because he's always just pouring out the content.
I know.
He's a genius, that's why.
Well, didn't he say in his last email that his family was going, what is he doing? Because they can just hear, it's the same Archers, the same tune over and over and over again.
I'm excited. I found Raised Roof on Instagram.
Good.
So I can't wait to hear more about that, Matt.
Yeah. Well, yes, I hope it goes well, Matt. And yes, and thank you very much. And we will now sign off because this has been a long one.
Yeah, sorry. And some wine.
And we'll sign off with the Apache Archers.
Oh, wow.
In tribute to Bartleby and his, and his headdress, according to Jennifer. Okay. See you next week, chaps.
Hurrah!
And thank you very much for listening.
Thank you very much for listening.
Anything else before I press the music until you decide to interrupt again?
Just a mini monologue. Mm. Thank you very much for contributing, for all your emails, for your likes, for recommending us on national podcasts, for your reviews, and just for being great, guys. Thank you. Thank you so much. And congratulations, Sarah. I'm really sorry about what I said about the baby's head. I hope it doesn't haunt you in the middle of the night.
God. And on that note.
Just forget I said it. Forget it. No, have a great week.
Yes.
See you in December, Lucy.
Yay.
Mad. Bye.
Bye.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.